to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, why do some people decorate their homes with greens and fresh flowers on Shavuot? Passover, Yom Kippur, and Hanukkah are all Jewish holidays that everybody's heard of and are celebrated by everyone from the Orthodox to the Reform. Shavuot, pronounced Shavuos by Ashkenazi Jews, is not as well known, but it is one of the most important holidays on the Jewish calendar. So before we get to our story, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the holiday itself and some of its customs. Shavuot falls 7 weeks after Passover and celebrates the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai, as well as the grain harvest for the summer. In biblical times, Shavuot, along with Passover and Sukkot, was one of the three pilgrimage festivals. At this time, all the Jewish men would go to Jerusalem and bring their first fruits as offerings to God. The bringing of the first fruits to Jerusalem was a unique event. Tens of thousands went up to the holy city. Today, there are a number of ways in which Shavuot is celebrated. We stay up all night to learn the Torah because the day that it was supposed to be given, the Jews accidentally overslept and Moses had to wake them up because God was already waiting on the mountaintop. Now, to make up for the mistakes of our ancestors, many religious Jews stay up all night to learn Torah. During Shavuot, we read the biblical Book of Ruth, a story with special significance for Jews by choice. A famine forces Elimelech and his wife Naomi to flee from their Israelite home to the foreign country of Moab. Soon, Elimelech dies, and Naomi is widowed in Moab. She continues living there with her two sons, who eventually marry two Moabite girls, Orpah and Ruth. Tragically, both sons also die, leaving Naomi to live with her two widowed daughters-in-law in a strange land. Naomi decides to leave Moab and journey to Bethlehem to live amongst the Israelites again. She encourages both Orpah and Ruth to return to their parents and remarry in Moab. Orpah reluctantly agrees, but Ruth refuses. Out of love, she chooses instead to stay with her mother-in-law and embrace Judaism. Her kindness is eventually rewarded in Bethlehem, where she marries a wealthy farm owner named Boaz. Together they have a son named Obed, who becomes the grandfather of King David. The Book of Ruth is read on Shavuot because King David was born and died on that holiday, and also because the events of the story occurred at harvest time. Many modern Jews relate this story to the importance of accepting strangers and immigrants into our communities. In Sephardi communities, the Shabbat before Shavuot is called Shabbat Kala. The Torah is likened to a bride, and the Jewish people to a bridegroom coming to meet his bride. Thus the poets composed wedding songs and instituted a special version of a ketubah, or marriage certificate, that's read out in the synagogue when the Torah scroll is taken from the ark, just as the ketubah is read under the wedding canopy. This Shabbat is widely celebrated in Jewish communities. The synagogue service is followed by dancing and refreshments. As with all holidays, Shavuot has its special foods, in this case, dairy. Some of the most common explanations are, before they received the Torah, the Israelites were not obligated to follow its laws, which include the ritual slaughter of animals and kashrut. Since all their meat pots and dishes now had to be made kosher before use, they opted to eat dairy foods. Another explanation is that the Torah is compared to milk by King Solomon, who wrote, "Like honey and milk, it lies under your tongue." Still others say that Shavuot occurs during the fertile spring period, when animal mothers produce lots of fresh milk. Whatever the reason, dairy foods are typically eaten on Shavuot. In commemoration of the other aspect of this holiday, it's customary to decorate one's home with greens and fresh flowers on Shavuot as a reminder of the spring harvest and the ancient ritual of bringing the first fruits to the temple. However you celebrate it, all of us at Radio Sefarad wish all of you Chag Sameach, Gut Yontif, a happy Shavuot. And now to our story. Greens for Shavuos, by the Yiddish writer Shalom Aleichem, is about a young boy who lets his imagination run away with him when his mother allows him to go and gather greens for the festival. It also contains a reflection on how easy it is for us to give in to our basest instincts and the consequences of the reckless abuse of power. This version was translated by Hannah Berman and published in 1922 by Alfred A. Knopf in the book Jewish Children. On the eve of Shavuos, I induced my mother, peace be unto her, to let me go off outside the town by myself to gather greens for the festival. And my mother let me go off alone to gather the greens for the festival. May she have a bright paradise for that. A real pleasure is a pleasure that one enjoys by oneself, without a companion and without a single argument. I was alone, free as a bird, in the big cultivated field. Above me was the whole of the blue cap called the sky. For me alone shone the beautiful queen of the day, the sun. For my sake there came together, here in the big field, all the singers and warblers and dancers. For my sake there was spread before me the row of tall sunflowers and the delicate growths that were scattered all over the field by a benevolent nature. No one bothered me. No one prevented me from doing what I liked. No one saw me but God, and I could do what I liked. If I liked, I might sing. If I liked, I might shout and scream at the top of my voice. If I liked, I might make a horn with my hands and blow out a melody. If I liked, I might roll on the green grass just as I was, curling myself up like a hedgehog. Who was there to give me orders? And whom would I pay heed to? I was free. I was free. The day was so warm, the sun so beautiful, the sky so clear, the field so green, the grass so fresh, my heart so gay and my soul so joyful that I forgot completely that I was a stranger in the field and had merely come out to cut green boughs for Shavuos. I imagined I was a prince, and the whole field that my eyes rested on and everything in the field and even the blue sky above it, all were mine. I owned everything and could do what I liked with it. I and no one else. And like an overlord who had complete control of everything, I longed to show my power, my strength, my authority, all that I could do and would do. First of all, I was displeased with the tall giants with the yellow hats, the sunflowers. Suddenly they appeared to me as my enemies, and all the other plants with and without stalks, the beans and beanstalks were enemies too. They were the Philistines that had settled on my ground. Who had sent for them? And those thick green plants lying on the ground with huge green heads, the cabbages, what are they doing here? They will only get drunk and bring a misfortune upon me. Let them go into the earth. I do not want them. Angry thoughts and fierce instincts awoke within me. A curious feeling of vengefulness took possession of me. I began to avenge myself of my enemies, and what a vengeance it was! I had with me all the tools I would need for cutting the green boughs for the festival. Pocket knife with two blades and a sword, a wooden sword, but a sharp one. This sword had remained with me after Lag BaOmer, and although I had carried it with me when I had gone with my comrades to do battle outside the town, yet I could swear to you, though you may believe me without an oath, that the sword had not spilled one drop of blood. It was one of those weapons that are carried about in times of peace. There was not a sign of war. It was quiet and peaceful around and about. I carried the sword because I wanted to. For the sake of peace, one must have in readiness swords and guns and rifles and cannon, horses and soldiers. May they never be needed for ill, as my mother used to say when she was making preserves. It's the same all the world over. In a war, one aims first at the leaders, the officers. It's better still if one can hit the general. After that, the soldiers fall like chaff, in any event. Therefore, you will not be surprised to hear that, first of all, I fell upon Goliath the Philistine. I gave him a good blow on the head with my sword and a few good blows from the back, and the wicked one was stretched at my feet full length. After that, I knocked over a good many more wicked ones. I pulled the stalks out of the ground and threw them to the devil. The short, fat, green enemies I attacked in a different manner. Wherever I could, I took the green heads off. The others I trampled down with my feet. I made a heap of ashes of them. During a battle, when the blood is hot, and one is carried away by excitement, one cuts down everything that is at hand, right and left. When one is spilling blood, one loses oneself. One does not know where one is in the world. At such a time, one does not honor old age. One does not care about weak women. One has no pity for little children. Blood is simply poured out like water. When I was cutting down the enemy, I felt a hatred and a malice I had never experienced before, immediately after I had delivered the first blow. The more I killed, the more excited I became. I urged myself to go on. I was so beside myself, so inflamed, so ecstatic that I smashed up and destroyed everything before me. I cut about me on all sides. Most of all, the little ones suffered at my hands. The young peas in the fat little pods, the tiny cucumbers that were just showing above ground. These excited me by their silence and their coldness. And I gave them such a share that they would never forget me. I knocked off heads, tore open bellies, shattered to atoms, beat, murdered, killed. May I know of evil as little as I know how I came to be so wicked. Innocent potatoes, poor things, that lay deep in the earth, I dug out, just to show them that there was no hiding from me. Little onions and green garlic I tore up by the roots. Radishes flew about me like hail. And may the Lord punish me if I even tasted a single bite of anything. I remembered the law in the Bible forbidding it. And Jews do not plunder. Every minute when an evil spirit came and tempted me to taste a little onion or a young garlic, the words of the Bible came into my mind. But I did not cease from beating, breaking, wounding, and killing, and cutting to pieces, old and young, poor and rich, big and little, without the least mercy. On the contrary, I imagined I heard their wails and groans and cries for mercy, and I was not moved. It was remarkable that I, who could not bear to see a fowl slaughtered, or a cat beaten, or a dog insulted, or a horse whipped, I should be such a tyrant, such a murderer. "Vengeance!" I shouted without ceasing. "Vengeance! I will have my revenge of you for all the Jewish blood that was spilled. I will repay you for Jerusalem, for the Jews of Spain and Portugal, and for the Jews of Morocco. Also for the Jews who fell in the past and those who are falling today, and for the scrolls of the law that were torn, and for the—" "Oh, oh, oh, help, help! Who has me by the ear?" Two good thumps and two good smacks in the face at the same time sobered me instantly. I saw before me a man who, I could have sworn, was Ochrim the gardener. Ochrim the gardener had for years cultivated fields outside the town. He rented a piece of ground, made a garden of it, and planted in it melons and pumpkins and onions and garlic and radishes and other vegetables. He made a good living in this way. How did I know Ochrim? He used to deal with us. That is to say, he used to borrow money from my mother every Passover Eve, and at about Sukkot time, he used to begin to pay it back by degrees. These payments used to be entered on the inside cover of my mother's prayer book. There was a separate page for Ochrim and a separate account. It was headed in big writing, Ochrim's account. Under these words came the entries. A ruble from Ochrim, another ruble from Ochrim, 2 rubles from Ochrim, 0.5 ruble from Ochrim, a sack of potatoes from Ochrim, and so on. And though my mother was not rich, a widow with children who lived by money lending, she took no interest from Ochrim. He used to pay us in garden produce, sometimes more, sometimes less. We never quarreled with him. If the harvest was good, he filled our cellars with potatoes and cucumbers to last us all winter. And if the harvest was bad, he used to come and plead with my mother, "Do not be offended, Mrs. Abraham, the harvest is bad." My mother forgave him and told him not to be greedy next year. "You may trust me, Mrs. Abraham, you may trust me," Ochrim replied, and he kept his word. He brought us the first pickings of onions and garlic. We had new potatoes and green cucumbers before the rich folks. The neighbors were all jealous of us. I used to rejoice when I heard Ochrim from the distance in his high boots and his thick, white, warm woolen cloak, which he wore winter and summer. When I saw him, I knew he was bringing us a sack full of garden produce, and I fled into the kitchen to tell my mother the news that Ochrim was coming. I must confess that there was a sort of secret love between Ochrim and myself, a sort of sympathy that could not be expressed in words. We rarely spoke to one another, firstly, because I did not understand his language. That is to say, I understood his, but he did not understand mine. Secondly, I was shy. How could I talk to such a big Ochrim? I had to ask my mother to be our interpreter. "Mother, ask him why he doesn't bring us some grapes." "Where is he going to get them?" she answered. "There are no grapes growing in a vegetable garden." I asked, "Why are there no grapes in a vegetable garden?" "Because vine trees do not grow with vegetables," she answered. "Why do vine trees not grow with vegetables?" Why, you are a fool," cried my mother and gave me a smack in the face. "Mrs. Abraham, do not beat the child," said Ochrim, defending me. That is the sort of Gentile Ochrim was, and it was in his hands I found myself that day when I waged war against the vegetables. This is what I believe took place. When Ochrim came up and saw his garden in ruins, he could not at once understand what had happened. When he saw me swinging my sword about me on all sides, he ought to have realized I was a terrible being, an evil spirit, a demon, and crossed himself several times. But when he saw it was a Jewish boy who was fighting so vigorously, and with a wooden sword, he took hold of me by the ear with so much force that I collapsed, fell to the ground, and screamed in a voice unlike my own, "Oh, oh, oh, who is pulling me by the ear?" It was only after Ochrim had given me a few good thumps and several resounding smacks that we encountered each other's eyes and recognized one another. We were both so astonished that we were speechless. "Mrs. Abraham's boy," cried Ochrim, and he crossed himself. He began to realize the ruin I had brought on his garden. He scrutinized each bed and examined each little stick. He was so overcome that the tears filled his eyes. He stood facing me, his hands folded, and he asked me only one solitary question. Why have you done this to me? It was only then that I realized the mischief I had done and whom I had done it to. I was so amazed at myself that I could only repeat, "Why? Why?" "Come," said Ochrim, and took me by the hand. I was bowed to the earth with fear. I imagined he was going to make an end of me. But Ochrim did not touch me. He only held me so tightly by the hand that my eyes began to bulge from my head. He brought me home to my mother and told her everything, and left me entirely in her hands. Need I tell you what I got from my mother? Need I describe for you her anger and her fright, and how she wrung her hands when Ochrim told her in detail all that had taken place in his garden, and of all the damage I had done to his vegetables? Ochrim took his stick and showed my mother how I had destroyed everything on all sides, how I had smashed and broken and trampled down everything with my feet, pulled the little potatoes out of the ground, and torn the tops off the little onions and the garlic that were just showing above the earth. "And why? Why, Mrs. Abraham, why?" Ochrim could say no more. The sobs stuck in his throat and choked him. I must tell you the real truth, children. I would rather Ochrim with the strong arms had beaten me than have got what I did from my mother before Shavuos, and what the teacher gave me after Shavuos, and the shame of it all. I was reminded of it all the year round by the boys at Heder at school. They gave me a nickname, the Gardener. I was Yussel the Gardener. This name stuck to me almost until the day I was married. That is how I went to gather greens for Shavuos. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirah.com. See you next week.